Broadcast live. Studio A. Global Media News. SUNY Old Westbury College campus in Old Westbury, New York.
It's Global Media News time live from Studio A. This is Global Media News on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Marcy Mendonca.
And I'm James Artizoni. You're listening to Global Media News from the New Media Newsroom on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio.
This week in New Media News.
On the YouTube beat.
Why is YouTube labeling some videos as state-funded? Do we need to know that?
YouTube.
What else is YouTube doing to crack down on negative content?
Our social media, the future of news.
What happens to the press when young people get their news from social?
Are their social media really social?
Is social media use affecting our social skills?
Beware of fake apps with real consequences.
How can you tell the fake apps from the real?
Is your Twitter account a professional embarrassment?
What steps can you take to clean up your Twitter history?
Let's go to the stats. Who has the most users?
Is Snapchat beating Instagram? And what about Facebook?
Celebrity Twitter apps.
Recently, just announced last Friday on their official blog that they would be requiring companies who are either partially or wholly funded from another government or state, and it's going to appear on the bottom of videos. So it's just going to say, for example, it would say for RFA, it would say RFA is funded in whole or in part by the American government. And this is supposed to just prevent the spread of fake news and inform, like, users where their news is really coming from, like if it's biased from the government. PBS was concerned about this because they stated that they receive a small percentage of their funding from the federal government, but the majority of their funding comes from private donations. So the new labeling could only imply that the government has influence over PBS, which is prohibited by statute. It's not clear over, like, the amount of funding that the company would have from government or another source for the label to show up, because their proposed label says in part or in part by the government, so it doesn't specifically say, like, the amount of funding, so it's not clear, like, how much funding they would need to get to be required to be labeled.
Okay, and what are some YouTube channels being required to have this notice?
So some of the YouTube channels are RT, which is Russia Today, Sputnik, AJ Plus, PBS, and CBC. And a lot of these channels think the policy is aimed at them, like RT, which was recently forced to register as a U.S. foreign agent.
How would this help prevent fake news on YouTube?
YouTube thinks it would prevent fake news because it would tell the user where the video is actually coming from. And it'll, like, clearly say that the video is funded in part of government, so it could have some sort of bias on it.
Are there any specific channels that this policy is aimed at?
Well, like I said, it's probably aimed at RT, Sputnik, and outlets like that. PBS and CBC also will be affected by it. It would also help prevent fake news because recently YouTube's been increasing efforts to promote more accurate news sources. So back in October, after the Las Vegas shooting, one of the top YouTube search results were conspiracies and misinformation on the events. So one of these videos was called "Proof Las Vegas Shooting Was a False Flag Attack, Shoot Your On-Field Floor." And it turned out that this was just fake news, and it was dramatized, and it was seen 1.1 million times in 27 hours. So YouTube's been really trying to crack down on having more accurate and authoritative news on their site.
Is there any way now that we can differentiate between fake and real news?
On YouTube? Not really. The label doesn't come out yet. So now it's just... you have to use your best judgment. For Global Media News, I'm Kristen Brave. Back to you, Marcy.
Thanks, Kristen. There's always more news about YouTube. Let's keep going with a report from Joe Fryman about the ways in which YouTube is cracking down on negative content. Joe, what is YouTube doing and why are they doing it?
Thank you, Marcy. So for a while, YouTube's been trying to handle not only the fake news issue, but a lot of negative content on their sites that are giving them a bad reputation, also making advertisers pull out, for example. AT&T pulled out a couple months ago and has not come back to YouTube yet, and they probably will not end up coming back because of everything else going on. One of the bigger issues that they've been having is with one of their top creators, Logan Paul. He is a 22-year-old vlogger who, infuriatingly for a lot of people, me included, has been basically drumming up free publicity with all of his controversial uploads recently. Last year, right at the end of the year, he made headlines because he uploaded, against his better judgment, uploaded a video depicting a suicide victim in Japan. A lot of people, me included, were very upset about that. It took YouTube a very long time, an embarrassing amount of time, to not only pull the video, but start to punish him. His brother, Jake Paul, is also a YouTuber and also a bit of a scumbag. One of the videos that he's uploaded is they modified a car horn to deafening levels and then used it in a shopping mall, and it caused permanent hearing damage for just a random guy.
And what were some of the, what did YouTube do to reprimand them or punish them?
Well, nothing has happened to Jake Paul, and frankly, I don't see them doing anything about that. Although they have started cutting down on prank videos, which is good, because that's not content, that's just obnoxious. It took them a couple days to pull the video down, the Suicide Forest video, and then after he took about a month off with a bunch of not really sincere apologies and stuff like that, they finally pulled him from their preferred program, which is a program that pushes their top creators to the front page and creates more ad revenue for them. So he's no longer in that program. A project he was involved with in got pulled. He was removed from a YouTube Red show. And recently, within the past couple of weeks, they pulled all of that revenue. Finally, there was a report on RT.com. YouTube is taking this. They're not taking this lightly. They're starting to attack channels that do content like this. His recent video was his vlog. I think this previous Monday was him tasering dead rats and trying to resuscitate a fish. Great content. Wonderful. So YouTube has started to crack down on this kind of content. They are, in their own words, trying to root out any bad apples. And they're banning the right to suspend ad revenue for any content creators that break their rules and policies, as well as suspending their ad revenue. By doing this, they're more or less burying the content of the violator so that it's not seen on the front page and it doesn't come up in searches and whatnot. There was actually an interview, I think it was around a week ago at this point, Casey Neistat, one of the biggest content creators on the site, sat down with the head of YouTube's business, Robert Kinsel, I believe you say, is how you say his name, addressing all of the YouTube creators' concerns. When asked about obtaining restrictions for becoming eligible for YouTube, the new program requires at least 4,000 hours of watch time in the last 12 months, and requiring at least 1,000 regular subscribers. A lot of new creators absolutely cannot meet that, especially animators. So he basically gave a nothing answer, saying, "We think that this level is high enough for us to learn about the partner so that we can turn the ads on them and not disappoint advertisers. And at the same time, it's not so far out that it will be untenable and unreached." Untrue. They're, I guess, doing their best. While all this is going on, Logan Paul continues to upload videos with little to no consequence. Another update that it was in his Monday blog, he said that they've more or less hired a babysitter to help him with his decision making, which I think is pathetic. He said, I've been been a bad egg recently. You know you've seen the news. I've been making some horrible decisions, and Team Maverick decided to bring in, essentially, a babysitter. Someone who's, like, still a kid and who I respect, but also that kind of has a brain, and that's Mike. Anytime I go to do something I shouldn't, because I can't really even be trusted with myself anymore, I'm working on it, but Mike's going to make sure that no bad things happen.
So besides the ad revenue being taken down, basically the consequences have been more towards the smaller YouTubers, not so much the big YouTubers like Logan Paul, who pretty much caused this.
Yes. While he was not wholly responsible for the ad clips and everything, he barely has been hurt by it at all. His subscriber count continues to grow, which is really upsetting because his audience is mainly kids and they're watching this garbage instead of, you know, something meaningful. So basically all of YouTube's ideas about how to fix this are just screwing over all the new creators or people who are just doing nothing wrong, just trying to make a living. There are a lot of people who have had to give up their YouTube dreams because they just can't meet their requirements. So I think suspending his ad revenue is a step in the right direction. Unfortunately, one of the other heads at YouTube was quoted as saying she doesn't think all of Logan Paul's content is bad enough to warrant kicking him off the site, a statement a lot of people disagree with, me included. But I'm hoping that if he continues on this streak, that they'll just eventually wise up and just kick him off and, you know, go back to supporting people who actually make meaningful content that advertisers want to put their ads in front of. I feel like Logan Paul is just bringing the entire community down. It's just creating more and more bad publicity for YouTube. In fact, a lot of reporters have this idea that all YouTube creators are just lifestyle bloggers. It's something that you see in a lot of reports on this stuff. They just don't know about it, which is acceptable because it's not their thing, but not every YouTuber is a lifestyle blogger. There's other types of content. There's more important content, frankly. But it's a developing situation. The hope is they'll figure out how to fix it eventually. For Global Media News, I'm Joe Fryman. Back to you, Marge.
Thanks, Joe. When we return, more social media news. Our publisher revenue's crashing because we all get our news on social. And just how social are social media?
Welcome back to Global Media News. I'm James Artizzoni. My co-host, Marcia Mendonca, has a new media news story for us about the role that social media news consumption is playing in the failing business model of the press, for newspapers, circulation, and revenues falling because young people get their news on social. Marcy, where do young people get their news?
So, more recently, Facebook, Twitter, and Snapchat have been the main place where people will go for news, but it doesn't mean exactly that it's news that's posted directly onto those social media news sites, websites. A lot of the time, it could just mean that they're going there to access other news channels, such as the New York Times, TechCrunch, and stuff like that. They're just going there first. They'll kind of find out what's going on, and then we'll kind of branch off into other news sources, other websites that have the actual news on.
What has the effect been on newspaper circulation?
So weekday news circulation has fallen 8% in 2016, according to Pew Research Center, and 67% of Americans get at least some of their news on social media, compared to 62% in 2016, which is also was reported by Pew Research Center.
What are the benefits of receiving news online?
So it's definitely about ease of access. It's much easier to just open up your phone because most people are on it all day and just go to the social media apps that they're already on and be able to find out what's going on in the world. It's definitely much faster because you can pretty much access the news as the authors are writing the articles. So you're finding out what's happening as soon as it's happening, whereas in the past you'd have to wait at least a day for a newspaper to go to print to find out what happened the day before, even the night before.
What kind of damages of going through social media do for the news?
So you definitely have to be careful when going through social media because pretty much anyone can post an article, so you just have to be careful about making sure that the actual news source, the website that it's coming from, is an accredited source that it actually has the real news, because there's a lot of false information that can spread, as well as fake news sources. Everyone talks about fake news, and that's just a lot of what can happen when you're going through social media. And of course, a lot of it, we can receive lots of good information through social media, but at the same time, you have to be very careful of who's putting it out there and where they're getting that information from and where they're reporting from, because, like I said, anyone can just write an article and post it on the internet. It doesn't mean it's exactly 100% true. You also have to be careful and do your research on it. And thank you very much for Global Media News. I'm Marcy Mendonca. Back to you, James.
Thanks, Marcy. Are the social media actually good for our social skills? Is an enormous amount of time we spend on social media affecting our social skills? Are we developing a new type of social media skills? Marissa Vola is doing the research. Marissa, what made you choose this topic?
I chose this topic because I think social media has really, came a big thing for everybody, especially the younger generation and the older generation. So as generations continue, I think social media is continuing to be the favorite communication among mostly everybody, not just younger people. And it could possibly be affecting the ability to properly communicate in person with others. And I see it, every day with people that they just rather pick up their phone and text someone rather than calling them to make plans. And it's just constantly evolving. And people prefer quick and frequent engagement and the instant updates on their phone.
So do you think technology plays a big part in social media?
I do, because the technology, it advanced so much in the past few years that it's so easy just to text someone or post a picture on Instagram and comment on it. And when people see each other in person, they're not talking to each other in person, but they'll text them or comment on their picture or something. And also, I saw a quote online that was interesting, and it said, people tend to want to show others that they are having fun than actually having fun themselves, which I agree with, because so many people are just posting everything online, like statuses on Facebook about what they're doing and how much fun they're having, instead of actually being in the moment and having fun. And there's a more of a greater desire to share with other people that you barely know than actually hanging out with your friends and making memories with them. And I think it's just really become something, I think it's a bad thing. Sometimes it's good if you need to send a quick text message or something, or something quick, but I feel like people are just losing their communication skills, because it's just easy just to pick up your phone and not see somebody.
I agree. Definitely see that a lot. You see people, posting about something, but then when you actually, go and you see what they're doing, they're just kind of, sitting on their phone. So
exactly.
That's, the
so
most interaction.
It limits the face-to-face communication between people and the normal etiquette that you're supposed to have. And, this could be at home, school, or at work. And it's basically a deterioration of your social skills, and also your grammar and punctuation. You could tell that sometimes you're bringing your text language into your homework or somewhere where it's not supposed to be. And it kind of creates an antisocial behavior among people because you don't want to, you get shy in front of people now, especially for the younger generation because they don't really, this is all they know. They don't know anything else other than having their iPhone to contact someone or emails and stuff like that.
Do you think there is a specific age group that would prefer the use of social media over in-person communication?
I don't really think there's an age group anymore because I feel like everybody is doing it, not just younger people and teenagers. I think that even older people are just using their phones for everything, and they're kind of losing that aspect that they have to talk in person, which they used to have to do. And now even the younger people are just using their phones for everything, and they don't know how to have a conversation, or they get anxiety picking up the phone and calling someone, which I agree, I kind of do that now. I kind of had anxiety if I had to call somebody, depending on who it is. I don't know, do you guys have anxiety when you have to call someone sometimes, depending on who it is?
Occasionally.
Like, would you rather email someone or text them rather than calling them?
I'm trying to, like, work on it, because at work I have to, like, make a lot of phone calls.
Yeah, especially at work, you have to call people, so you have no choice. But, I mean, if you want to make plans with your friends for a Friday night, you're not going to call them anymore. You're just going to text them.
I think it's all about just kind of incorporating what you have to do at work into your everyday life and just remembering that, like, you know, you don't have to, like, rely on your fingers. You can actually, like, call people, you know.
Exactly.
People exist. You can talk to them.
Exactly. Yeah, but, I mean, now I feel like that's just, it's becoming a bad thing because people are emailing people at work instead of calling them or leaving a message or something like that, which in some cases it is a good thing because you can have some certain things in writing, but sometimes you just have to call someone.
You brought this issue to light, and obviously there are many people that agree with you and that are sort of realizing this. So do you think that this issue is going to remain the same or that it could progress as technology advances or it's just going to keep deteriorating?
I think it's probably, I feel like it's going to get worse as the technology advances because there's only going to be more technology. And, I mean, some people might think this is a good thing, especially nowadays. Everything is with technology, even the homeworks technology, work, there's no paper anymore. So, I mean, it could actually become a good thing eventually, if that's the new norm. For Global Media News, I'm Marissa Evola. Back to you, James.
Well, thank you, Marissa. Do big apps have real consequences, and how can you clean up your Twitter history before it affects your professional future? Welcome back to Global Media News on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio. Miguel Castro is here with me to discuss the real consequences of fake apps. Miguel, are there a lot of fake apps out there? How can we tell if an app is fake? And what can we do to protect ourselves?
Thank you, James. Particularly smartphone users will have to take caution in the future, as fake apps are crowding up app stores and websites, taking their passwords and personal information. Once in your phone, these apps have free access to sites, text, login information, and even they can turn on your camera and inspect you on every job. These have very important and crucial privacy concerns. These aren't the only effects that the apps can have, starting from spamming ads, sending random alerts, and causing private information breaches. It's clear that you don't want this in your phone or to breach your life. Particularly, these aren't the only platforms that are tracking you. They're also in the current, specifically in the Android store more than the Apple store. There are fake banking, shopping apps, and even cryptocurrency apps that you can invest the money into it and basically be just giving it away. That's a very big concern of many people as they're taking advantage of you. To protect yourself from this information, it's important that you check out not only the apps that you have downloaded, if you have any weird-looking apps on your home screen, probably check them out. Maybe they're not what you think they are. Specifically, if you still are concerned, sometimes some apps don't show up on your home screen, so it's better to go up into your system settings and check the applications, because then you'll be able to analyze everything that's been downloaded. So if you see something in the downloads that you don't see in the home screen, you should definitely check it out or double-check that one. If you think that you might be part of the 4.2 million that have downloaded them so far, you should, best course of action, reset, perform the factory reset on your phone, as this is a very serious concern.
Have you ever stepped in that trap and downloaded one or more of these fake apps?
Yes, actually. Back when I first got my first two Androids, I was just going through some websites, and I clicked on a link, and then I realized that there was just a really weird-looking app on my phone that I don't remember downloading. It was very strange, and I just tried to get it off, and I had to go through more extensive methods to get it, to uninstall it. But it definitely scared me knowing that there was something on my phone that I didn't intentionally put.
What were the methods? Did you have to like go through Apple? Who did you have to reach out to finally get that sorted?
Personally, I realized that the website that I was on had ads that if you click on them unintentionally or they pop up, that's how they got into my phone. So I had to just search extensively about what are these apps that come up without me giving them permission. And that's how I found out about fake apps. I ended up having to do a factory reset on my phone, which thankfully I got to save a couple of things here and there, but some might not be lucky. But thankfully, I was able to read my phone.
Well, I like to say that's actually kind of scary. Are the majority of the fake apps all that dangerous?
Oh, definitely, but for the majority, I'd say that you are most likely dealing with people just spamming ads on your phone so they can get revenues. Occasionally, you'll have random alerts that are just to annoy you. But the small percentage of them have the potential to breach your privacy and cause major financial concerns and privacy concerns for you.
Are there any phones that are more susceptible to this or more at risk?
Yes. Apple's actually doing a decent job of keeping them out of the Apple Store, but Android has had a lot of trouble on them. Although they have not permitted over 750,000 apps from going into the App Store, there are still quite the majority of the people that are victims of fake apps are Android users. So even though there are efforts to stop it, Android users are the main victims.
So besides sort of looking kind of funky, is there any way to differentiate these fake apps when you're just, you know, looking in the App Store trying to download, say, like a game or something?
Yeah, for sure. When you look up something in the App Store, sometimes you'll see things that are very similar looking to other things. So, for example, the latest breach was WhatsApp. And what happened was that people thought that they were downloading the legitimate WhatsApp application. But in reality, they had an application that looked similar to it. But in reality, it was taking their information, and it reached over 1 million people. It was, thankfully, it wasn't that malicious. It was just farming cryptocurrency and tracking, well, what ads you would like. But a breach like this in the wrong sort of hands can definitely have very bad consequences.
Yeah, that's scary.
For sure. I think that the biggest part of this is just double-checking your phone and double-checking your downloads every once in a while, because you never know what can happen. From Global Media News, I'm Miguel Castro. Back to you, Marcy.
Thanks, Miguel. Don't let Twitter haunt you. Your Twitter history can reveal consequences as well. Greg Mandel is on the Twitter beat for us this week. Greg, describe the problem for us. Why does it matter what you did on Twitter 3 years ago, and what can we do about it?
Twitter is actually a pretty dangerous platform for people with opinions. Say you're tweeting about anything like in today's current political climate or anything, and your employer has opinions about this. You might think that, you know, they're fairly innocuous on a site like this, you know, just sharing information with people you know or whatever, but it turns out that your employers are probably more interested in stuff you have to say than you want them to be. So all this stuff is going to come back to bite you.
So is this a difficult process of going through and deleting all this stuff? How would you go about that?
Well, actually, Twitter has a pretty useful feature in that they have a way for you, they have an advanced search that you can go through and look through all your tweets and everything and search by keyword, date ranges, certain accounts you've mentioned. So you can pretty much pinpoint exactly what you need to get out of there. Say you're getting a job at like a Wall Street type corporation or whatever, and you've had some particular opinions about the type of business they do, like say their oil or pharmaceuticals and stuff. However far back that is, if you were saying stuff in 2011, they're going to bring that up and they're going to show that to you at your interview and they're going to ask you about it. Or if they miss it, then you have the job, they come to you at your desk one day and they say, oh, what's all this? You know, and just somebody without these opinions is more valuable than somebody with them. So it's just that cold and cut and dry.
Just yesterday I saw that someone had been hired at the New York Times and fired in the same day because they had, they found tweets of hers from, like, I think 4 or 5 years back using the N-word and just not being politically correct.
Right, we have a ton of examples of this. And, like, I mean, just take Trump, for example. Essentially, everything that comes out of his mouth, he's contradicted in some tweet, whether it's 5 or 6 years ago. But it's just almost everything to the point where, like, I was just looking at examples of this before, and you know, he spoke out about like sexual assaults and everything in 2013. And then he had the whole grabbing by the stuff, and he was in a ton of stuff like that. He said, so far he's got Mexico building the wall, he's got Hillary building the wall, we're gonna build the wall. That if you don't want to be out there just saying stuff wildly and having it come back to bite you, you really have to pay more attention to stuff like that.
What type of professions can actually be damaged by like Twitter industry?
Well, like, you know, if you're going to be in the media, definitely you got to go back and just, I would say, just wipe it off. Like, you really don't want anything out there. Really, you know, mostly anything nowadays, you know, yeah, if you're working at McDonald's, they probably don't care too much, but, you know, how much longer is that even going to last? You know, I mean, it's just easier and easier for them to look at this stuff. Easier and easier. All they have to do is just bring up your account. If it's not private, they can go look at it now. Everything you've ever tweeted. So, if you don't have a catalog of that, then you're not protecting yourself.
So, what is it that's dangerous about not keeping an eye on your Twitter history? Is it just go beyond just the job search?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, anything that you leave on there can be used against you. It's your thoughts and opinions. So, you know, somebody else has access to your account, they're typing stuff on there, that's you. You know, to anybody. So, yeah, really, you could be held pretty liable for most of the stuff you say on there. It's not just some place to say anything. You know, I mean, you can use it that way, but you have to be conscious of what you're doing.
It's still a public forum. Anybody can see it,
Another thing you can do, Twitter allows you to go ahead and ask for your entire Twitter history. Like, they can generate an entire archive for you. So if you really want to go through and look at every single tweet, they offer that. They don't let you actually delete tweets in bulk. You have to use third-party services for that, but they have a bunch of them. I think one is called TweetAside. There's a tweetdeleter.com. Aside from that, you can go back and like look at the stuff you liked with services like Snapper and stuff like that. Because even that, say you're liking a lot of alt-right stuff and just want something, and you're trying to go work in a media organization. You know, are they really going to be going for that? You know, definitely not. This point in time. So, you really need to keep an eye on all that kind of stuff. Alright, so for Global Media News, I'm Greg Mandel, back in the game.
Thanks, Greg. Who is winning the battle of the stats between Snapchat and Instagram? And why are so many celebrity Twitter accounts being hacked?
Social media professionals need to keep up with the latest news about the popular platform. Aisha Foster is our social media reporter today, and she's here to discuss the battle of the stats between Snapchat and Instagram. Aisha, why is it important that social media professionals keep up with the latest stats and metrics analyzing the popularity of different platforms?
Thanks, Marcy. So, something like this is a really important topic. You know, this is 2018. We live in the day of social media, period, and I actually found it interesting that journalism.org, they did a survey from, they reported a survey from the Pew Research Center that 67% of Americans get their news on social media. So being that you have all these various different platforms, which ultimately is a form of a news source for everyone, it's important that companies, creators, influencers are tracking that so that they're better able to, you know, assist and engage with their, you know, their audience. I also found it interesting that, you know, the most popular website sources that people get their news from are Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, you know, even YouTube and Instagram. And although that Facebook is arguably one of the main news sources that people, you know, get their news from, depending on the platform that, you know, the person is getting their news source from dictates where they get their news. So to be specific, Twitter users are more likely to get their news from websites and apps, and Facebook users are more likely to get their news from TV. So apps like Snapchat, which targets a younger audience, specifically from the ages of 12 to 17, they offer more visually appealing content. And it's so interesting because even though people are logging into Facebook less and less, Facebook owns Instagram. And Instagram keeps up with Snapchat. So it's like, what ultimately is Facebook's target really? You know what I mean? Because now millennials, they're no one's really logging on to Facebook that much. Facebook doesn't have what I would consider visually appealing content. You know what I mean? I would say now it's just for keeping in contact with, you know, old friends. Anyone you want to really look up, type in their first and their last name. But when it comes to Snapchat and Instagram, they're offering, like, such visually appealing content. That's what's really getting us. And another interesting thing that I'd like to add is that for news now, right, you have companies like CNN, NBC, and even the New York Times that share, you know, a platform to on Snapchat specifically to reach younger demographic, which is so important because you can easily argue that, you know, people that are not millennials can easily argue, oh, millennials are don't want to read anything anymore. All they're doing is just, you know, going and clicking this and clicking that. Okay, but if that's how life is going, you know, you got to go with the flow, right? Don't you think? So Snap, now these companies like CNN, all these major news sources, the Daily Mail, Huffington Post, now have an outlet on Snapchat. People are going to read that, and what are they doing? They're catering to the younger audience by still offering real news, you know, by all means, credible sources, but they're just making it so that they can involve the younger audience into that. I mean, I think that's brilliant. You know, I don't see anything wrong with that.
So do you think that the lack of visuals and integrating the younger audience is why Facebook is becoming outdated? Why do you think, what do you think the major cause?
100%. 100%. Because I found that I have deactivated my Facebook really off and on since I was 16, and I'm definitely 23. So it's just like, to me, Facebook is just not as appealing. You know, it's specifically for a different audience, and I'm not a part of that. You know, when I'm going on Facebook, it's to really just drop my YouTube channel, post some photos of myself, do my yearly update. But I'm not constantly or consistently on Facebook, you know, updating my status. I've never been the type of person to even scroll and look at the videos that they put. I've never been that person. I've never been consistent with Facebook since I was, like, 16 years old, you know. So I definitely think the lack of visual content. And you know what? I was thinking, even if Facebook did sort of add that, how would they even incorporate that? You know what I mean? What's going to differentiate, you know, any social media platform from one another? If Facebook becomes Snapchat and Instagram, then what's the difference between Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram? I don't know.
Well, I actually saw now on Facebook that apparently you can, like, view your stories on Snapchat or something, or, like, Instagram stories on Facebook, like, you know,
really?
Like, yeah.
I do know that Facebook has a feature. When I had the Messenger app for about a nanosecond, that they do stories and, like, you can see exactly who, like, viewed the story. But come on, who's going to go, check out my Facebook story, guys? You know what I mean? Like, it's like we have Snapchat to do that. We have Instagram to do that. And now, actually, you know, more in current news, interestingly enough, everyone's going crazy over the new Snapchat update. No one really likes it. So people are now utilizing Instagram more than ever and using Instagram to upload their stories now. So Facebook is just becoming really essentially really less and less relevant.
Is Snapchat like a reliable thing though to like really get news though? Like what do you think?
I wouldn't really say so. You know, being a media communications major, you know, it's important in this field to get reliable and credible sources. You know, if you're someone that's in this field and you're an adult, you know, you're not going to go to Wikipedia.com and just whatever they say, you run with it. You know, a child will, you know what I mean? But, you know, you have all of these major networks that we are familiar with, CNN, NBC, things that everyone knows, you know, is known for news. If I'm looking for news, I'm going to go where I know there's a credible source for news. And that's why when I see these, you know, when I see these major news people, the Daily Mail, Huffington Post, and I see stuff like that on Snapchat, I'm going to click on it because ordinarily I'm not really someone that I would consider an article reader unless if it's really something that I really want to know, you know? But when I see it offered on Snapchat and it's offered in such an engaging way, I swipe up to see who, there was a major, like, thing that they made a big deal. It was Meghan Markle. They said, you'll never guess what Meghan Markle did. Well, what did she do? That was so crazy. She gave someone a hug. They blew that up. That she gave someone a hug. Apparently and allegedly, the royals do not hug people. So it was a big deal that someone told her a heartfelt story, and she gave that person a hug. Wow, like, I didn't know that. Thank
That's
you.
Interesting, because then you get, like, you think that it's something so, like, little as, like,
yeah,
someone gave someone else a hug, but then you actually learn something that the royals don't get.
Exactly. So it serves its purpose. It definitely serves its purpose, and I enjoy it. I like what Snapchat is doing. Well, what they did. I don't like the new update. No one really understands it, but ultimately, right now, I would say even as far as YouTube goes and Instagram goes, YouTube, you know, given, you know, all of the history with that, to sum it up, that, you know, they're making it really hard for new curators to really, you know, thrive. Instagram is still ultimately on the top, you know, and it's way easier to build a career on Instagram than it is on any other social media platform.
And do you think it's necessarily a bad thing that millennials are engaging with more visual content rather than reading an article from a credible news source?
And see, that brings me back to my other point when I was saying that because these major companies are offering, you know, news information to a younger demographic, there are creative ways to do that. That is their job. If they really want us to know, you know, information, that's a part of having a brand. That's a part of being a, you know, a content creator. You know, you have to engage with the audience, listen to your audience, see what it is that's going to engage them. If you want, you know, the millennials to have knowledge and click on, you know, whatever news story that you were trying to, you know, put out there, then you have to figure out how to engage us in that. So no, I don't think that it's necessarily a bad idea that, you know, we don't have 18-year-olds going on, you know, the New York Times searching up what's going on today. You know, I like the fact that they incorporate, you know, visual content, you know, to incorporate us, like, in, you know, what is it they're trying to put out there. For Global Media News, I'm Aisha Foster. Back to you, Marcy.
Thanks, Aisha. My co-host James Artizoni is our celebrity new media beat reporter. This week, James is covering the hacking celebrity Twitter account. James, is this common? Who's being hacked? Who's doing the hacking? And why are they hacking these celebrities?
Well, it is actually very common. It's been actually going on for, like, years and years, and it probably will keep going on for years. But the actually good thing is that security has actually gotten a little bit more better. Like, I know on Twitter now, and even, like, on other social media places like Instagram, you can have, like, a two-factor, like, a two or three it actually, once when you actually log in, it says, oh, I need to send a passcode to your phone for like an approval. So you type in that passcode. So I feel like it has actually gotten a lot more better. Like, who's being hacked are mostly, the target is mostly, like, celebrities more so than, like, regular people and everything, because they're more of a target. They have more followers. They have more place to, like, just, you know, to get more news out there. And, like, they're hacking these celebrities just because they really want to start, like, kind of, like, a trend there. So just want them to just log in and, like, meet people's information and just try to get on to it.
What do you think is the appeal of hacking these celebrities? What makes them more of a target besides the wider audience that they have?
I really just think it's because of, like, really of who they are, you know? Like, I know, like, they mostly just target, like, verified people because of the fact that they have millions of followers, or maybe sometimes, like, thousands of followers. Like, they just want to get something trending. They want people to believe it. And they also want, like, to get on to, like, the news. Like, you know, like, all the time you see people leaking, like, nude photos, for example. Like, you know, like, that's something, you know, like, their fan base is just going to go crazy about. Like, you know, so they just want to try to get as much information as they can from these people. Yeah.
What else have you seen that's been released besides nude photos of celebrities? Is there any other kind of information or anything like that that other people have gone crazy about?
I actually have. I saw one about, about Britney Spears, like, apparently dying. Like, you know, that one of Sony Music's account, the Twitter account, actually got hacked and posted that, oh, like, Britney Spears died. Like, you know, like, and I remember, like, just seeing, like, being like, oh my god, like, that's kind of, like, crazy. Like, you know, like, I didn't know what to, like, believe at first. You know, because it's coming from a verified account, so you don't really know. You know, like, sometimes it's just hard to, like, distinguish or not if the account is actually hacked or not. Because, you know, like, it's coming from a verified account, and it's just hard to know. Like, you know, there are just some chains where you can actually tell that they're being hacked because they're just tweeting funny stuff. Like, I don't know why that somebody would really do that, so.
Have you ever been hacked?
I actually have before on Twitter from a Kylie Jenner fan account. It was actually the funniest thing. I logged in one day in the morning, and then I logged into it, and then all of a sudden my whole account was just changed. Like, I tried typing in my username on like the Safari on the internet, and then it wouldn't show up. So I was like, what the hell? Like, you know, like, what is this? So, like, luckily I have, like a few things kind of, like, fixed the, like, Twitter. So I have that, and I logged in to see, like, you know, because I follow myself on it. Don't ask why. And then all of a sudden it was just a Kylie Jenner fan account, like, and I was like, oh my god, like, did I really get hacked? And I looked at my email and everything, and the person changed my password, changed my email to associated on it, and I guess they really wanted to, like, steal, like, my account because I have a Kylie Jenner follow on Twitter. So I guess, like, I don't know why, but, like, I don't know how they would actually guess my password. Like, and I saw it, like, while I was on my email, it shows the location as well, like, what city. It was, like, from New Jersey, too. Like, and I was like, you know, like, I wonder if I know this person, like, to this day, I still don't know it. But, like, luckily, I contacted Twitter a few days later. I got my account back. My friend tried, even tweeting the account, and, like, they, like, blocked them. And I was like, oh, my God, like, you know, I don't want them to realize, like, I know, like, I was hacked, like, you know. So
what did Twitter do about it? How fast did it take for them to handle it?
I sent them an email, like, I believe, like, the next day, and they responded actually about, I think I sent it on Saturday, and then they responded on Monday. They were like, oh, we're really sorry, like, blah, blah, blah. Here you go, like, here's your account access, like, here, make a new password, your username is back, and everything, so. I just have to unblock my friends that they blocked, so. For Global Media News, I'm James Arzani, back to you, Marcy.
Thanks, James, and thank you for hosting with me this week. Many thanks to Ricardo Morales and Nikita Hines-Lundy for producing our shows.
Today, we heard reports from Kristen Breen, Miguel Castro, Marissa Vola, Keisha Foster, Joseph Fireman, me, Craig Mandel, and Marcy Mendoza.
Global Media News is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York, College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts on the Catalyst at oldwestburycatalyst.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN.